Welcome back to Following Noah on a Stormlight podcast. This week is episode 210, and we are in The Lost Metal, chapters 35 through 43. Elliot, how are you?
I am doing pretty good, enjoying these chapters. I do think, though, we probably need to rename our podcast to, like, World Hoppers Anonymous or something like that, because there's been a lot of them lately.
You don't think Noadon is in this crowd somewhere?
Oh, he probably
definitely is.
There you go. Paul, how are you?
Fantastic. Once again, this week was a wild week. I feel like I've said that the last several weeks, so maybe I'm the boy who cried wolf. But lots of stuff going on, lots of characters. Moonlight was a shock for me, but there's more that I want to talk about this week. So excited, ready to lock in.
Sounds good. Let's roll intro and then talk about The Lost Men. Before we get a chapter summary, Paul, do we have a patron?
We do. We have another surgeon, which makes my heart smile big. yes, we do have another surgeon this week. Very happy to announce that this week we have the lovely Lexi. That was my dramatic pause. Sorry, Lexi, we're glad to...
The auto editor cut it out, so it wasn't a pause.
I was going to say, yeah, just cut that. That was not it. In my head, there was music in the background of that and like a big dun-da-da-dun after I said Lexi, but there was not in real life, so we're just going to have to roll with it. I'm sorry. And the further I go, I keep butchering this. Lexi, we're very thankful for your support. And I will try to get it where you can actually see the name in my horrible handwriting once again. I'm surprised that we're still doing this because it's not even hardly legible how I write. So all that being said, thank you so much for your support. And once again, to all of our patrons, we really appreciate all the help and are excited to keep going. So all that being said, thank you, Lexi, and let's talk about The Lost Metal.
If you want, I can add in a live little sound bite for you. Like that. There you go.
Lexi.
Can you guys hear this?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I can. Okay. That's pretty okay. Cool.
Anyway, thank you, Lexi. Appreciate it. Elliot, brief summary of... what happened in these chapters?
Lost Metal, chapters 35 all the way through 43, sees a lot of things happen, or at least a lot of really interesting conversations. We left off with Wax and Telson having a chat, and Wax, I think, learns that Telson is stalling him and also picks up on some hints that Governor Entrone might be part of the set. So Wax heads off to go break into his place, which in later chapters he does, breaks into Governor Entrone's office, finds a bit of information on his calendar, which made me wonder what other people could learn about me if they looked at my calendar. Anyway, he sees that there are like no events scheduled after 2 days from now. And on 2 days from now, it says they arrive. And then he finds a safe in the floor, tries to escape, realizes there's also a trap door in the floor, goes through the trap door. I think that's the last we see of Wax in these chapters.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Marcy and crew are going full ghost blood at this point because Marcy is able to worm her way into the Ghostblood safe house and gets the full-on introduction to the Ghostblood crew. And we have conversations with them. We have a straight-up person-to-person conversation with the one, the only, Kelsier, We get lots of name drops. We get tons of crazy things happening with new magic systems and new names of new places and planets. They're pulling out jars of purified door to go save the world with. They've got locks and safes that open at the touch of your identity. And it gets pretty straight up crazy. Ultimately, the whole Ghostblood crew sets out to go save the day. They are able to track down where they think the entrance to the set base is. Like the, I think they think there's lots of caverns. They think that the subway projects have been a front for creating these underground like bunkers. So they think they found another like warehouse place that is going to be the entrance to that. They set out to go there and bust down the walls and save the day. Yeah, all that.
There you go. The Telson scene. I want to talk about the Telson scene. She shows up, starts monologuing like most villains do, and then Wax realizes this in real time. He's like, hold on. She's monologuing on purpose, which tells Wax two things. A, I'm on to her and she's worried about it. And two, she's trying to stall me because there is something I could be doing that would be a problem for her. So he doesn't know what he's supposed to be doing, but he realizes he needs to not be there because that's where Telson wants him to be. So that's pretty much, I mean, the only thing that really happens with Wax and Wayne in this episode, the majority of our content this episode is with Marcy and Moonlight. Do you guys have anything with Wax and Wayne before we talk about the safe house? Because it's going to be quite a bit with that safe house.
Just a brief reference to a thought that Wax has in the middle of that conversation with Telson. He's kind of wondering in his head, like, how did we get here? How did Telson become the bad guy and me become the good guy? And where he kind of gets to is he thinks about the fact that Telson has been very stuck in her thoughts and therefore has become an extreme, like, not good version of herself. Whereas I, Wax, have changed. I learned from what happened to me, and I deviated is the word that he uses. I think I would maybe, this is Elliot's word, I would throw in the word like adapted. He corrected in his path and did not become the extreme version of himself. He became a more well-balanced, perhaps. It was a brief little moment in there, but I thought might be an interesting like commentary on characters and life journeys and whatnot. It seemed like there was a bit of a nugget there.
Yeah, Wax realizes he still does know Telson, but he also realizes that Telson doesn't know Wax. That Wax has changed since Telson makes all these assumptions about him, but then that Telson's still very much the same power seeking, power hungry that he knew her of.
Yep.
Absolutely. I think I mentioned this a little bit before, but I've really enjoyed these scenes. I've honestly really, really liked this aspect of the siblings as enemies. I guess it makes it more personal to me. I had talked about before. I feel like it was hard for me to have a sense of personal connection to the villains that we've had. And this kind of starts to check those boxes off. And I feel like I've been more invested in the relationship between the protagonist and the antagonist here. I thought this was a really good, really good scene and really enjoyed it.
Anything else before we get to the safe house? I just really want to talk about the safe house.
Yeah, I kind of do
so
too.
So much stuff there.
Okay.
Actually, let's skip the safe house.
Okay.
Nothing really happens. They're in this little house. They talk for a bit. That's my update.
True. There's some stuff, some people, some conversations.
Some people I don't even know. So,
oh, you know,
why would we want to talk about it?
Oh, you know them, Paul. We'll see, get there.
This... Oh boy.
All right.
Oh boy.
So, Marcy and Moonlight. We ended, I think, part two of the book last episode with Telson walks in the door, the end of part two, blah, blah, blah. Marcy and Moonlight finally get like a one-on-one conversation for the first time since that truck ride at the beginning of last episode. And long story short, Marcy and Moonlight go to the Ghostblood safe house in Bilming. And the first thing that she notices in, or one of the first things that she notices in the safe house is these maps on the wall. And one of them says Scadrial. And it's a massive map, way more detailed, way bigger than she's ever seen before. And it's actually the map that's at the beginning of The Lost Metal. Elliot, do you... I think you mentioned this. There's a new map at the beginning of The Lost Metal that's like all three continents of Scadrial, which is way more than we've ever seen before. Paul, I think I can probably find a picture of it for you. But
it does.
That's the map that she's seeing.
It's way zoomed out from... So before, we just had a map of the basin, the Ellendale Basin, and the roughs immediately around it. And then after the events of the end of last book, we know now there's the Malwish and all their stuff to the south, a whole nother continent. But yeah, this map at the beginning definitely goes even beyond that. There's other like islands out there. There's maybe the tip of another continent down here further south than the Malwish even. Yeah, there's a lot.
Right. So all the maps we've seen are of so far are of the basin and like the surrounding roughs, which on this map are not even a quadrant on this entire map. Like there is so much to Scadrial that none of the basin is even interested in up until now. And we've just like at the last part of last book and into this book, are we beginning to even consider the rest of the world? That's how big Scadrial is. So there you go.
Yeah. I'm kind of floored with this information. I did not see this map before. And yeah, man, this is way bigger. I feel like the world that I'm thinking of is kind of tripled in size. And right. Now I'm just wondering how much stuff is out there that we don't even know about. I feel like this is going to play really nicely into maybe Era 3, where Brandon Sanderson is going to have plenty of cards left to pull, I imagine. Because that's pretty big. Pretty big, and a lot of stuff we have no idea what's there. Maybe they're hiding another shard, another one that has not been named yet.
He who we cannot name, or whatever they say.
Yeah, the shard of the shard of uncertainty. That's what I'm thinking with, because I have no
idea. Indecision.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Who's the first person we meet in the safe house?
So code names?
Oh, it's better than that even. The full code name is Code Names Are Stupid.
Code Names Are Stupid.
That's
her full code name.
That is right.
All right, throw your dart at the dartboard. Who is this? You have seen her before.
See, I was so proud of myself last episode for knowing the World Hopper. And now we're back to the... Yeah, I have no idea.
I will say there's almost no way you get this. And the only way this has been confirmed is Brandon was asked about it.
See, that makes me more excited to guess, because now there's no silly wrong answers. No pressure. You know?
Right.
Because to me, I'm like, this character doesn't seem to fit a description that I know. I'm assuming that this is like a far in the future type thing.
This is... Ooh, I know who this is. So we've already seen some Nalthians. Nalthans.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Going places.
Of the same thing.
So we know a few of those are bouncing around Roshar. What if this is Ciri, the other sister?
That's what I was thinking. Direction. The other sister, the second sister.
Okay.
I wanna throw out like a major Stormlight name, but I just don't see Brandon Sanderson being like, yes, this is Shallan, or yes, this is Yas. I don't know, some major protagonist in what, Stormlight. When it has
what's the descriptor finished. We get of code names?
Languages?
Is it white hair?
She is interested in Thalen, but she's not native to the Thalen language. So like, she's really interested in it. She has short blonde hair, and she has a dog. That's all you get.
And no swear words.
This is...
Wait. Is this waiting? Tress somehow?
It's not Tress.
Okay. Never mind.
This is Kayce, daughter of Keyyne.
Oh, no, they Alantris. Say that in here. Oh, but I... Okay, this is not fair. Okay, I would have had this.
Do they say this?
They do. That name is in here. But I did not recognize it because I did not read the physical version of Elantris. I listened to the audiobook. It's the one and only, actually, it's the only book on this podcast that I've listened to the audiobook. So I didn't even think about that being the pronunciation of that name. They have that name in here.
Okay, there you go. I did not remember hearing that name.
Ah. That's how you get it, by the way. The name is in here.
Yeah.
I did not remember that name.
So Serini's crazy uncle who can cook a lot of good food. Mm-hmm. This is his eldest daughter, Kayce, Serini's cousin.
Wow. Okay.
So there you go.
Okay.
Super cool.
Not the coolest person in the room by any means, though. Who's our other guy in the safe house?
So this dude is fascinating. Twin Soul.
His real name is...
Oh, they say that too, but I didn't write it down.
Prasanva is his real name.
Yeah.
Prasanva. So this isn't a world hopper person then, is it? Or someone we should know?
Well, he's definitely got to be a world hopper. He has not seen Skadrian.
Yes, you're right about that. My apologies. I said that a bit wrong. I'm thinking of someone we should know. This isn't someone we should know, is it?
I will save you some time. You have not met Prasanva before.
Okay. So that makes me feel a little bit better because I was listening to all this stuff and I was really trying to figure out who this is. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I've got no idea. I thought it was going to be like a big aha moment. And I know this is, I don't know, Vasher's little brother that we haven't met or something, you know?
Yeah, so Prasanva, this guy's crazy. Like, I'll just say it. He's got some stuff going on. He has an ether, and he builds Legos with it. Like, I don't know how else to describe it. His little ether can, like, build little rock sculptures at will, and they kind of 3D model their plan with it.
He's like a walking 3D printer.
Yeah. And let me I'll go ahead and show some art
of
this fine gentleman. This is from, let me properly credit, hold on, Botanica XU. We've shown some of their art a couple times before on this podcast. But here you go. He has his ether glasses on, and I don't know. He looks a little Rosharan, maybe? Like, maybe somebody off of Carbranth?
I was about to go down a road of trying to tie him to Roshar.
Yeah.
Well, in fact, I think there is a tenuous link there. This is kind of further down it. Well, we'll just go all in. We'll go all in right now. Here we go. Okay. So this bro, Ether, whatever the heck is going on with that, he's got some kind of a link to a thing, a being that gives him this power. There's a couple other clues that drop along the way. We get told that ethers are older than the Shattering.
There you go.
They even have more conversation. This is probably like Codenames and Moonlight or whoever are like arguing. They're like, oh, yeah, ethers are older than Adonalsium. And the other one's like, well, hold on. I didn't say that. Right. I said older than the Shattering. So that was a conversation I followed. Ether. Okay, so he's got this link. We get a name for the ether.
Is Silajana.
Yeah. Bonded to Silajana, a primal ether. That's not revealed when you first meet the dude. It's kind of like drip fed to you as you go.
Right.
And just the way he talked made me very convinced that he was about to reveal that he was a Night Radiant and he had a spren. Mm-hmm. Because he kept saying like, oh, let me check with Siljana on that. Yes, we can do that. You know, having these like weird little half of a conversation kinds of a thing. So I was like, oh, he's got like a spren on his shoulder kind of thing. No one else can see it. Turned out to be a little bit different than that. We also get hints that Siljana has like other people they're connected to.
Yes.
I think is kind of referred to. It's like, oh, I'm just one agent of Siljana or something to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
And the other people are also like, please tell Siljana that we are grateful that they are lending you to us for our purposes. A lot of reverence.
Yes.
Yeah. For this, this being, this ether thing.
Okay. So let's zoom out for a second. There are people way more nerdy about ethers than your host here. All I really know about ethers is they are not tied to a specific shard. They're not tied to Adonalsium. They're like a magic system parallel with Investiture. They don't really follow the same rules as Investiture. But, Elliot, your spren theory that was quickly disassembled by the end of this episode, I believe that the Night Radiant, the Nahel bond, like the bond between Night Radiant and Spren, is inspired by or modeled after this.
Okay.
Where I don't know if it was Honor or Cultivation or both of them who are designing their Spren and the bond, that type of thing. This, I believe, this is like the inspiration of that. So some of the same rules that you can pull from a Knight and Night Radiant and their spren, I think you could apply here, where they both have to, you know, agree that it's mutually beneficial for both of them, that, you know, the spren could suffer if the Night Radiant like strays from their oaths. Like there's a contract here, but like a Night Radiant and a spren, that I think you can apply those rules fairly well to here.
Yeah, I'm glad you clarified that, Trevor. That was my question right now, was I don't actually remember Aethers really. When else have we seen this elsewhere? This seems to, like, I remembered hearing that term, I feel like, but I did not remember specifics on Aethers.
Let me pull up the page and see where we've seen them before. So we've seen them. We will see them in the two books you haven't read yet. And there's an Oathbringer interlude that has an ether. The wash lady who can't get the black out of the ink, like the ink out of the clothes. Marais's wash lady. Marais mentions an ether. That's where you've heard it from before. And Ash is his wash lady. Shalash is Marais's laundry lady, and she can get ether out of clothes or something like that. That's the only place you've ever seen it before, I think.
That is going way back in the history books for me. I don't remember this hardly at all. I remember that scene now vaguely, but I don't remember mentions of aethers. So just, it makes me feel better that I'm not like missing something that I should have remembered. You know, that's kind of obscure. Interesting.
I'll read you a quick summary. Marais returns and offers Palm a drink, calling her Ancient One. So Marais knows who Palm is. She starts to leave, but stops when Marais claims to know where Talonel is. He gives Mem a bonus for getting the ether stain out and dismisses her, advising her to find a new wash girl. And that's the summary. So there you go. That's where you've seen the term ether before. You don't know that much about it. And from now until Stormlight 5, we're reading them in publication order. So it is a new term for you. We will learn more in Tress and Sunlit, but as far as like a scene one definitely on screen, it's pretty new for you.
So I mentioned Roshar. And I want to explain why I'm not going to completely dismiss links to Roshar. Although my gut is telling me this guy's something different that we haven't seen before. Like maybe something from a planet we haven't even heard of yet. But one of the most intriguing bits of information that he drops is the following. There's little else for us now until we can return home. The forces in my homeland are too strong, too deadly. Siliana says we must remain in exile. He will decide when and if we are to return. He would not risk another extermination. Very vague, very cryptic.
Right.
But the word extermination reminded me of another word, scouring.
Okay. Yep.
The word scouring has been specifically applied to an island on Roshar called Aemia. I was wondering if perhaps he could be like some kind of an outcast of Roshar, of like an old Roshar, and his people were like wiped off of Roshar, perhaps from the island of Aemia. Or that, of course, brings up questions like Sleepless and right. Beings like that, which I don't know if I'm ready to link him to those just yet, although I wouldn't count that out. Tenuous link, but perhaps the only way I could tie it to Roshar specifically.
It does feel Sleepless parallel, where it's like there's something like creepy magic going on, but it's not investiture per se. So I would kind of put it in that category, but I'm not sure if that would be more misleading than helpful.
Right. It feels new. I don't think I've seen a guy who can 3D print stuff out of rock powered by a tank of water that he carries on his back.
Like, that was a great sentence you just said.
Figure that out. Oh, and by the way, he also drops like, oh yeah, and your planet has really poor fields of investiture, so it makes it really difficult here. Or something along those lines.
And so, you guys thought you knew the Cosmere.
Right? That's exactly where I'm at right now.
See, I really thought this book was going to be like all the Cosmere stuff that we know coming together in a package. But instead, it's a package of things I don't know at all, just about, or maybe I've heard one mention of. So, yeah, I'm having to figure a bit out.
What else is in the safe house here? Have a bunch of little trinkets, don't we? Like when they're gearing up to go for their mission, Moonlight grabs like a bunch of random stuff.
Yeah, there's some really, really vague references to some of that stuff. I couldn't even dig into that because I wasn't able to pull anything out of those. I did really like the locks that they have.
Oh yeah, for the safe?
Not just the safe. I think it's the door on the way in, maybe, or there's another one. The first one we see is an identity lock. It's like a fingerprint reader. Moonlight goes and like puts her hand on a bit of metal. The metal reads her identity and unlocks the door. Like, yep. Genius, right? We've been learning a lot about identity this book and maybe the last few. What a great way to lock your door. You can't, as far as we know, fake that. I mean, we've also learned about how you can un-identity things. So would it be that far of a stretch to say that you could like take the identity out of you, stash my identity in that, somehow cloak myself in your identity? Maybe it's not completely foolproof, but still seems pretty smart.
And we talked about some of it last episode. I think soul stamps are going to be coming back into the Cosmere in a pretty major way, if not in this book, in some future books, because Brandon Sanderson is clearly trying to go play with identity as a system in these last couple books. So if you were to soul stamp yourself as someone else and then walk through their identity lock, I think that's completely feasible. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. It's as easy as that, Elliot. I mean, come on. All you have to do is soul stamp your identity into becoming someone else entirely for a period of time and then just walk through. It's that simple. Come on.
I mean, if anyone could do it, it'd be the girl who's standing in the room there, Shy. She's the genius soul stamper.
Go ahead. I'll wait for my tangent.
Okay. I was just going to tag on to that. That's not even the coolest lock in the place. So then they get to the safe. And the safe has an intent lock on it. So Kelsier gives Moonlight the code. Moonlight goes and speaks the code to the safe. The safe opens, but then explains that also it was locked via her intent. So even if you knew the code, even if you somehow got it out of Kelsier, the lock knows your intent. So it knows whether you're trying to fool it or whether you were honestly given the code and are giving it to the safe with the right intention to unlock it in the right way. Yeah. Beat that lock.
And the lock is awakened, which is a term?
That's our Warbreaker term.
Yeah, it's our Nulthian terms where you can awaken an old squirrel to wreak havoc among the court of gods, or you can awaken a lock and it can talk back to you. So it would appear either the Ghostbloods have been to Nalthus or Nalthanonians are off of their world and in Shadesmar as well.
What was your tangent that I distracted you from?
Ooh, great question. Oh, intent. No, not intent. The other one, identity. I think somebody's asked Brandon this, but if you were to manipulate your identity to someone else, you may be able to steal their radiant bond, which I think is a really interesting application of said magic. Because if you remember, in Oathbringer, Shallan scares off the Midnight Mother. What's her name? Jean-Not?
Ray Shapir.
Thank you. Ray Shapir. And Ray Shapir tries to steal the bond between Pattern and Shallan. There's a brief moment where she's trying to expel the Midnight Mother from the tower, Yirithiru, And Ray Shapir tries to steal Pattern's bond with Shallan. I think there's some really interesting things you could do with in identity if you manipulated identity and then try to steal a Spren bond. Anyway.
Oh wait, you're saying that. I remember seeing, I think, a comment on one of our previous videos about if you Duraliman pushed with connection. There's a metal tied to connection, right?
Uh-huh.
I think if you, like, I don't remember who it was. According to one of our listeners who commented, if you Duraliman pushed with connection, you could steal a bond, like, between the Radiant and the Spren. Like, you could steal that bond with the Spren.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. Like, that's got some really insane implications to think about. Yeah. That's one of those that, realistically, like, thinking outside of the story at hand and into the would Brandon actually write that, I feel like that's more of the, like, theory crafting, like, Lightweavers are the most powerful, and what is it they can, like, I don't know. There's some crazy stuff of, you know, hypothetically with infinite investiture, what can be done, you know? I don't know that this will happen.
Right.
But I've thought about it a bit, and I'm like, oh man, you know, Lord forbid, what happens if in a book Kaladin's bond with Silfrenna gets stolen, right? And Kaladin is left to try and keep going without Syl knowing it's stolen by someone. You know, like, you know, the hypothetical situations there get pretty massive implications, you know?
Right.
And so I'm going to not think about it. It's my solution.
Like you said, I doubt Brandon would, like, write something that super convoluted. That may be more of like a Stormlight RPG thing where you could see that in like a game mechanic.
Yeah. It's future. Like if you took the world that we're in and made it into a sandbox game where you have a lot of creative control and anything can happen. I definitely could see something like that happening. But as far as where our story's headed, as far as like the players involved and, you know, what's going to happen, I don't anticipate we're going to see that interaction. But if something led up to that where we saw, especially the identity thing, I feel like that might be like the trail. Yeah, we're going down there with Ray Shapir and Shallan and the identity, just going to call it the identity crisis. That seems maybe a bit more plausible. I don't anticipate a big Duraliman push to steal a Spren out from under somebody, but there could be. I don't think that we'll see that soon.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I think it is really something to think of as a possibility, you know?
Sure. What did Kelsier tell us on his little Skype call that we had?
I was going to say this FaceTime. That's what Sion. I was going to call it, this FaceTime.
Yep, they had a
Sion. We know what that is.
It was very funny. Yes, yes, we did spot the Sion. I did get that one. I thought this was kind of fun, and it kind of took me a second. So he's FaceTiming in through the Sion.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know why, for a little period of time, I was thinking of, like, is he doing this, like, from, like, okay, when we see Thaidakar at the end of Words of Radiance, sorry, Rhythm of War.
Yes.
That'd be crazy. You know, we see him, and I was getting mixed up in my head, which I think this was alleviated, of, like, he is still, like, a person sort of with a body, but this was just a Sion, like, FaceTiming just his face, you know, floating there, right? For whatever reason, I had in my head that whenever we see Thaidakar in Stormlight, that it may have been through the Sion as well, but I don't think that's the case. But I'm saying it because that's just what I was going through my head while all this was unfolding.
So I'll go ahead and say minor spoilers for the prologue of Stormlight 5 about to drop for you. And this is the prologue that we were given 2 years ago, not the one that was released 2 days ago, which I'm told there are changes. Not like major changes, but like some grammar changes. But anyway, short answer, Paul. Thydakar shows himself to Gavilar as a Sion projection. So there's like this little orb that rolls into the room and then like projector screens Thydakar as like a blue dude, like a blue image. And it's not, and Thydakar's not actually there. And then the orb like rolls itself back out the door. So Brandon Sanderson has been very clear in his many Q&As since that prologue that Thydakar is not physically on Roshar. He has not figured that out yet as of Stormlight 5, how to get onto Roshar. He wants to be there because he knows there's a lot of major things happening on Roshar, but I'm pretty sure he's Sion calling in to Gavilar. I don't think Gavilar knows that, but I think that's what's happening with Kelsier. On the Zoom call with Kelsier, he drops that he's like 12 hours away via airship. Does that mean he's like in league with the Malwish? I mean, we know that he's Malwish adjacent and their like religion or whatever, but is he like active in the Malwish politics and stuff?
I bet he is. I think it would make a lot of sense for whatever reason to have Kelsier be this character that, you know, we know goes away, as in the end of book one, and how we see him now. But you like find him later on in the story with like this other group of people that he's befriended and become, you know, buddies with. I think that's kind of satisfying and funny to have him come, like, you know, we see him hundreds of years later and he's just besties with the Malwish and flying around in their airships and stuff. I think that's funny. I buy it.
And claiming to be the Lord Ruler the whole time, apparently.
Yeah, so we got comments on our first episode of The Lost Metal that he's like, or maybe the last episode of The Bands of Mourning, that he's not claiming to be the Lord Ruler. But I don't think, because Alec is the one who like describes him, and then our heroes assume that he's the Lord Ruler. But I don't think Kelsier does anything to dissuade the rumors that he's the Lord Ruler. Like, I agree that he doesn't claim to be so, but if we're still making that assumption, like, you know, 6 years later, he hasn't done anything to correct those assumptions, right? Like, he's, if people are going to misconceive him as the Lord Ruler, okay, I don't care. Adds more mystery and mystique to my, you know, his legend, so might as well. Anything else from this episode, gentlemen?
Just that it ends on a rather ominous note of flashing back to Steris, actually, who is standing in for Wax in the Senate. And she's trying her best to prevent war, but when Wax's news comes back via letter saying, evacuate the city, the leaders basically panic and say, well, originally they're going to start a war, and then they panic and decide like they're going to get themselves out and leave everyone else to just die.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, Tensoon is in the room with them all, and they're like, well, hold on a second. You guys have the Bands of Mourning. Go get that. And so it literally ends on Tensoon going, okay, I'll go get that.
True.
And then also dropping a rather ominous hint at, like, this seemed completely out of the blue. He also is like, oh, and yeah, by the way, there's a really powerful way you guys could combine your powers that you haven't really tried yet. Maybe I'll explain that to you. And then he walks out of the room.
I think Chris has hypothesized this in like the Ars Arcanum, that compounding abilities creates like weird combinations that are sometimes expected and sometimes not. So maybe that's what Tenzin's talking about.
That was kind of what I got from it, was he almost hinted as like, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but if you combine your powers, it would get a lot more powerful. Yeah, it seemed like that was what he might have been referring to.
I agree that this one felt kind of like a low ball for us, almost, as the readers. Of a lot of times, we spend a lot of time trying to figure out what Brandon Sanderson is going to tell us, where a story's going to head, what's going to be a big reveal. I feel like this is kind of easily lobbed up as something we're going to learn probably before the end of this book.
Yeah. Anything else?
That's all I got. Kind of curious who's going to show up next on Skadrial, because apparently everybody's here.
Yeah, it's playing Whack-a-World Hopper. They just keep popping up and you got to figure out who's who. All right, let's close it there. We can reconvene next week. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
Let's do it.
Signing off.